Hi, this is Al, and welcome to the Open Chats by the Open Institute. This is season zero, and our intention is to talk to eminent personalities who work in the development space, in data and other sectors, in tech, to just think about what the future of Africa looks like. Today, I have with me the CEO of Converged Networks in Malawi. He is a Kenyan as well, and he's going to tell us a little bit about that history. And he had just recently joined the board of the Open Institute. In our season zero, we're going to be introducing you to some of our new directors at the Open Institute so that you can get to know them, because you will be interacting with them over the course of the rest of the year. And we wanted you to know them here first. Hi, bro.
Hey.
I have known you for more than 20 years.
Absolutely.
I think that's the case.
Yes.
It's more than 20 years.
It's much more than 20 years.
So would you just start by introducing yourself and just telling us your name, what it is that you do?
My full names are Brian Munyao Longwe. My dad's from Malawi. My mom's from Gambani, Kangundo, Kawede, a small village called Kawede to be specific.
Yes.
And I was born in Nairobi, grew up here. I am the CEO and co-founder of Converged Technology Networks, which is a internet service provider, although I like to think of ourselves more as an internet solution provider
right. In
Malawi.
Yes.
Because we provide internet to homes,
yes.
Connectivity, basic yes. connectivity, but we also do quite a bit in the sort of consulting space, helping organizations embrace digital and what it means, all that that means, this whole data revolution that the world is going through, helping organizations sort of figure out how to apply technology in ways that help them harness their data better.
You know, I was thinking about you recently, and I was thinking about the fact that in the entire time that I have known you, I have known you working for ISPs. And suddenly here in Kenya, it looks like the life of the ISP has sort of worn out. But now you're working for an ISP in Malawi. What do you think is the lifespan of an ISP in general? Is it 20 years? Is it 10 years?
Okay, so I think the internet service provider space is a very interesting one in the sense that, yes, as you say, there is a sort of life cycle.
Yes.
And any ISP, as they move through their evolution, gets to a point where they need to scale. You know, it's yes. almost like the adage, go big,
yes,
or go home.
Go home, yeah.
Yeah. And going big could look like scaling, you know, outside of the national borders.
Right.
It could look like merging or being acquired by a different company.
Yes.
And typically what we found over the years is that the ISPs that do not sort of cross that or jump over that hurdle generally tend to die.
So when you think about now the you know where you started out right at the beginning in the 90s, because you started out in the 90s.
Absolutely.
When some of us were still in primary school, at that point, what was it like, you know, working an ISP? Tell us some of the, you know, backstories of working in the back rooms of an ISP.
Yeah.
What was it like in managing routers, for example, and,
yeah,
and
yeah,
what
yeah,
kind of systems
yeah,
were there?
Yeah. When I started working in this space, for what became an internet service provider, there was no such thing as an internet service provider because there was no internet.
Right.
What we did have was email.
Oh, I see.
So I started working for a company called Homenet in 1996 that was providing email services through a bulletin board system called WorldCom.
Right.
And these email services were being made available to different individuals and organizations around mostly Nairobi.
Mm.
You know, those days it was a system called Store and Forward. You know, so you
store
had
store and forward.
Yeah, you had the concept of, just think of the analogy of a post office,
right?
Right? So you have a post office, which is like a place which just has many post boxes, and each individual has a post box.
We should tell Gen Z what a post office is, because
you know,
we've gone to a situation where the post office has now become
a derelict, you know, and unknown.
For Gen Z, what we used to do is that we had to write a letter, and it's like an email, but it's on paper, and then we had to put it in an envelope, which is another piece of paper, and seal it, and then we had to take it to an actual building
and write an address on it,
a number, and called PO Box 510,
Likoni,
and then you had to put that. Before you put it, you had to go and buy a stamp, affix a stamp. Please Google what a stamp is. And then insert it in a wall, and somehow the letter would magically appear after several days in Likoni.
In box 501.
In box 501. They would pick the letter, they would read it, and they would reply, and you would get a reply in another week or two. That's how fast communication was happening in those days. When Brian is talking about
a post office...
It's that building where we used to take the letters.
We had many different boxes in
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Yeah. So essentially the concept of store and forward would be, I want to send a message to Al, right? Al has a mailbox somewhere. I have a mailbox somewhere. So I have to write my message on the computer, and then the computer has to dial using a phone line
right
into a server,
yes,
which is where my mailbox is. And I have to deposit my message into that server.
Yes.
Then the server is going to push this message again over a phone line.
Right.
To an international system that has the routing mechanics for where all the different mailboxes in the world are.
Right.
And it will sort of look and say, okay, this one belongs to Al, so it will push it to the other server or computer which has Al's mailbox. And
yes,
Al will need to sort of think about his schedule on how frequently he should check his mailbox.
Right.
Most people used to check maybe once a day, in the morning, maybe in the evening, to see, you know, do I have mail?
So essentially, you have lived your life through a period where you had to write letters.
Yes.
In fact, you have lived your life through a place where you had to write letters and put perfume on it so that you can send it to another school.
You know, those love letters. Only being in my Githeri.
Exactly.
You know.
And then you went to work and you had to write business letters, which you had to still send.
Right.
And that means that you saw a telegram, and you know what
absolutely
that is. You know what telex is.
Yes.
You know what a fax is.
Yes.
Guys, you'll just Google these things. We're not going to describe them. And you actually saw the beginning of email.
The beginning of
in Africa.
Store and forward email, which eventually evolved into what we now know as internet email.
Per your perspective of what you have seen over the last 30 years, and I needed to ask you about that anecdote from 30 years ago so that we can come now.
Yes.
In that 30 years, what's the biggest thing that strikes you, like a step-by-step progression that all African countries will have to go through? And are there African countries that you think will leapfrog those changes? Like they will skip some of those stages and move straight? Like, for example, Malawi is currently doing an ISP, something that Kenya has now forgotten, and places like South Africa and others. But they're in now that stage of the journey. When mobile data becomes cheap, are they going to skip some of the process? Is the timeline shortening? What are you observing?
I would say the biggest game changer or the biggest shift, of course, has been the internet itself, in and of itself,
yes,
coming in and transforming the way we live and work and do everything,
right?
Right. Now, within the African context, and this goes, I think, hand in hand or in line with what has also happened in other markets.
Yes.
There has been a huge shift over maybe, I would say, the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
From where initially we as internet service providers were basically the ones calling the shots.
Yes.
Okay. You couldn't have internet without an internet service provider.
Yes.
You couldn't have internet back in the day without PhoneNet.
Right.
Or Africa Online UUNET,
or
Zuku,
Wananchi,
or Wananchi Online, yes. You know, NET 2000, yes. Nairobi Net,
yes.
Access Kenya,
yes.
You couldn't have
yes.
internet without working with one of these guys.
Yes.
Today, that is no longer the case.
Right.
Today, you move into a house, you go on internet, child.
Yes.
You don't even care who is providing the internet.
Right.
You just ask, is there Wi-Fi?
Yes.
It's become a commodity.
Yes.
It's become almost a utility.
Right.
Right?
It's like electricity.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The shift that I'm talking about is that now the internet is more or less in the hands of the content owners.
Right.
Or the content holders. Those yes. are the organizations that sit behind the scenes.
Yes.
And drive and control what the internet is and it looks like.
Right.
Today.
Yes.
There's something called a content delivery network.
Right.
The acronym is CDN.
Right.
These have evolved and have become, you could call it, the hubs of the internet as we know it today.
So what's an example of
CDN? An example of a CDN is Netflix. Netflix has their own CDN.
Right.
We all watch and love Netflix
yes.
movies and whatever.
Yes.
Now, for Netflix to be able to distribute and stream their movies and series and all of that stuff
yes.
with such quality and efficiency,
yes.
they had to build out a network
right.
of CDNs. Now, a CDN is purely and simply a cluster of computers with
yes.
a lot of storage
yes.
that holds all that content.
Right.
So the moment you say, I want to watch, is it Ruin Christmas? How to Ruin Christmas?
How to Ruin Christmas, right? Yes.
Season 2 or Season 3.
Yeah.
That request comes to the CDN
yes.
and the closest CDN to you.
Right.
Starts pushing that content to you. But it's doing it in a way that it's not just one computer that's pushing it. They've innovated and they're using algorithms that allow a whole bunch of computers to just throw all of this at you and it just reassembles itself mm-hmm. on its way. There's a bit of machine learning,
yes.
artificial intelligence that
yes.
comes into play. And AI is something else, right?
Just so,
ChatGPT?
Yeah.
Dude.
Blows your mind,
now,
right?
You know, you know, that's something else.
So ChatGPT is all the rage,
right?
And it actually brings me to the question that I'm going to ask you next, which is the next 10 years. What is a picture that you see, and what scares you the most about that picture?
In 10 years' time, and forgive my wild imagination,
yes.
but I'm a science fiction.
We're buff. Supposed to be. We're supposed
I'm
to be.
I'm a science fiction buff.
Yes.
I'm not a prophet.
Yes.
There is a chance that we might see the rise of the machines.
Yes.
Where the machines start to build better machines.
Right.
And those machines start to make their own decisions for themselves and
yes.
to think.
Right.
Or what we consider thinking for themselves. And we will not have, we will no longer be in control.
So, if I were to bring it right up back to you now. We started with you. We went around the world. We're back to you. What do you consider to be your life's mission?
So my life's mission, or what I consider to be my life's mission, is connecting people to one another using technology. It's something that I have been crystal clear about right from the start. The moment that I recognized the fact that technology, computers, internet, networks are ways that bring us together in just unbelievable and unimaginable ways and allow us to establish networks and connections. That's what drives me. That's what wakes me up every morning.
What do you think you're going to bring into the board at the Open Institute?
I hope that I'll bring some humor. I hope that I'll bring a bit of insanity, because I do believe that I'm a bit crazy.
Excellent.
You know? So I hope I can bring a bit of that and, you know, challenge both the team at the Open Institute, the board, to think inside the box, outside the box, throw away the box, and imagine what, you know, tomorrow may look like, and be a part of that change. Yeah.
You recently did a board meeting, your first board meeting, and you got to understand the organization. What struck you the most about that organization? What made it so special that you feel that you want to stay and be part of the board?
The concept of active citizenship, which is one of the key missions that the organization has in terms of being able to help Africans,
yes,
help people become more active in their citizenship, in demanding their rights,
yes,
as citizens, in being able to recognize, you know, how to create a better tomorrow for themselves.
Yes.
I love that. Not really a concept, but the principle.
Yes.
And, you know, just having, you know, lived and worked in over 21 African countries over this last 30 years of my career, there's a massive need for citizens, the people, to become more active in determining what their tomorrow looks like. For too long, people have been sat on, people have been disenfranchised, people have been, you know, pushed down, their voices taken away, other people calling the shots, exploited, you know? It's about time that Africans began to build their own Africa. And that can only happen through active citizenship.
If you were to prescribe an action for Africans, for us to be able to leapfrog, what would you prescribe for Africans so that we also become producers? So that we also become a part of that revolution, not simply consumers and you know, passive users of these technologies.
Now, this might be a bit controversial and maybe even a little bit political, but I would probably prescribe the same thing that Pan-Africans have been prescribing ever since we realized that there are more people living on this small piece of rock that we call Africa than just the ones that we see around us. And that is to have borderless integration, right? To be able to integrate ourselves beyond our borders, to be able to come together as one people, to be able to consolidate our resources,
yes,
harness our resources together,
right,
bring together our strengths,
yes,
right, and put them together for our own betterment,
right,
and the betterment of our children.
Yes.
And that thing, if you look carefully at history,
yes,
has been fought fiercely.
Right.
We won't say who has been fighting it.
Yes.
But every effort, every attempt for African integration,
yes,
has been hit down,
yes,
or struck down, or cut down in some way.
There you have it, folks. That's Brian Longwe. He's the CEO of Converge Technology Networks in Malawi. And we're really excited that he has joined the board of the Open Institute more recently. What we're going to ask you to do is this. There's a subscribe button. Please hit it. There's a little bell so that you will get the next episodes as we come across it. And guess what? This is season zero. We're just talking to our board members right now. But in the next coming seasons, we're going to be talking to even other industry experts in technology, in data, in development. And what we hope that you will do is that in the comment section, you will put names of the people you would like us to talk to, and we will. Thank you for coming. Talk next time.